Hello, this is Kyle Arts of SellBeatsNow.com and Beats for Legends LLC. Very excited today to get on the phone with Nick Casher to talk about some of his success, what he's doing. And while I know everybody's very excited to hear about his World Star Hip Hop video that got over a million views through Facebook and World Star Hip Hop, Casher's actually done a lot more than that in the time that he's been making music. So I'm interested in hearing about his new business that he's starting up, how he's got it all together. And I think that he's going to have a lot of quality information, a lot of quality value to bring to everybody who's trying to hear him out. So what's good, Nick Casher? Say hi.
What's up? I'm Nick Casher, a.k.a. Casher from My Music, a.k.a. owner of 100 Zone Studios, Beats by Casher. But I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm good. Just waking up. We're getting started pretty early here in the studio with me and Nick kind of waking up and getting set up right away in the morning to bring you guys this interview. So I want to get started right away, man. So with your we were just talking about your studio on the phone. So tell me a little bit about tell our viewers a little bit about, like, you know, what you do with your studio and how you've started your business, because I know that you've just got like a green screen in there. You've got a whole studio built and you had to move just to make that happen. So I kind of want to hear the whole story. You know, what happened through that process, and how did you come to the conclusion that, hey, I'm going to move into a different place that has an area for a studio just so I could start my music business? I mean, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, well, it's funny because for the past 10 years or so, I've had a makeshift studio set up in my house, whether it be in the basement or my living room or whatever the case may be. So when we started looking for a new place to live, we seen this place, and ironically enough, the space that we have our studio in is the old space for the drummer of The Fray, who's a pretty popular rock band.
Wow.
And this is the house that he grew up in. So I was like, you know, we seen this and we were like, you know, we should really just build a studio. I started thinking about it, and I actually went back to school and decided that running a studio is probably what I want to do with my life. So we have probably around 600 square feet of space. It's two separate rooms. We also built a booth, an isolation booth, inside of one of the rooms. So we've got the control room on the outside, the booth on the inside. In the other room, we built a green screen so we can do video shoots, photo shoots, whatever the case may be, and just kind of started from scratch. I didn't really know too much about how to market it or how to even go about everything. You know, we got the LLC now, so it's an official business. So things are kicking off the ground, and they're moving a little too quick for my comfort, because I'm kind of just wandering aimlessly into the dark. But it's so far it's brought us in, you know, a good amount of revenue, helping us, you know, pay everything off that we've put into it.
Wow, that's amazing. So pay everything off. So how much time and energy and money did it require you to get your studio set up, do you think? Because I think a lot of people kind of getting started, they have a laptop and a recording software, but they don't understand how much it's going to take. And I think these days it's a lot cheaper, right, than it was back in the day. So what do you think the cost is for setting up a studio like that?
Well, what we did is we had the room already, which is key. Once you have the space to do it, things should pretty much roll from there. We built a desk. I think the square footage of the desk is, let's see, 21 by 12 or 21, 31. So about 35 square feet of desk.
Wow.
And what we did is we measured everything out, as far as, because I wanted to make it a standing countertop desk so I could fit everything. So we strategically built this desk exactly to how I would run it as an engineer. So that desk itself, from top to bottom, probably cost around $600, and we did it all ourselves. So that's including the tools that it took to buy it.
Wow.
From there we built the isolation booth, which was basically, we took a closet, we took the wall out, we rebuilt a wall, put a window in it, and then all the soundproofing we probably spent $300 on, and then just paint is really it. As far as the equipment goes, I've got a $700 mic, I've got a basic interface that cost $400 at the time. I think now it costs, you know, less than $100. And then, you know, some headphones, a mic boom, and some cables. That's pretty much what we got.
Wow. So basically the room seems to be like one of the biggest investments. Well, I mean, I guess I can't say that because the computer and the softwares and the mic and everything is going to come out to some money. But, you know, what I want everyone listening to understand is, like, back in the day, you know, to get a studio up back in the day before digital technology, when everything was analog, I mean, it would have costed you $15,000 to get a very similar studio. And that's like you said, very easy to hit that number. And I think that a lot of people look at the cost of, like, recording software and everything, and they're kind of like in a little bit of shock by how expensive it is or whatever. And they think, maybe I can't come up with that amount of money. But back in the day, the only way to get a studio, if you didn't have money, was to take out a fat bank loan and you know, and straight up spend 15 grand to be paying it off the next 6 years, you know. So when it comes down to it, like, even if you're just getting started, to get a basic studio set up, you know, spend the $1,000, spend the $1,500 and spend it with a smile, you know what I mean? Because, you know, in your case, like, building the table pretty much costs, like, it was one of your biggest costs for the room, you know. And for that table, that's pretty cool too. I like that, because you actually built that yourself. So tell me, like, you used the software to actually map this out, right, before? So tell us a little bit about the process of building your perfect studio table.
Well, we didn't really know what we wanted at first. We knew that we needed the table. From my past experiences, if I'm recording myself, I don't like to sit down when I'm recording. So I figured we'd build it a standing table. I basically stood there, and my buddy measured from where my hands would rest on the table to type on the keyboard to the floor, and that's how we decided how tall the desk was going to be.
Perfect.
So we basically, once I figured out what I wanted it to look like, we went into this computer drafting program on my phone, and I spent 2 days kind of mapping it out to see what structurally would be sound. And then we went through and decided how much wood we were going to need. And what we did for the countertop is, instead of doing an actual countertop, we took floor tiles, like the laminate floor tiles, and we actually layered the desk with them. So, wow. And those are pretty cheap. They're only like 60 cents a square foot. So we built it by hand. It took us maybe in man hours, 16 to 20 hours to build it total.
Okay. Wow. That's a good amount of time. But considering you have your perfect studio, and now you're telling me that in your mic booth, there's actually a shelf so that you can stand and record if you're by yourself. Is that kind of what I'm getting?
Yeah, we basically went online and bought a rack that attaches to my mic boom that I can stand the wireless keyboard on, and I can control it right from where I'm standing.
Oh, okay. So you've got the screen in the other room then.
No, we actually wired a screen to the isolation booth as well.
Dude, that's dope. So you got a real great studio. So for the cost you're talking about to get a studio that's set up to where you have your own booth, and in that booth, you have a shelf to put your keyboard and mouse, and you got another screen hooked up to your computer, which I'm guessing is in the other room. You know, that's amazing. For all of that to be your studio and for it to be so cheap, and, you know, maybe in total cost, even including all the other stuff you've bought in the past, sounds like maybe like, you know, $3,000, $4,000 or something like that, someone could get a similar studio set up. And that is incredible. That's great, because a lot of people, when they start a studio, they get a huge bank loan and they think that spending and spending and spending is the only way to get a studio. And these days, it's just not true. So I'm really glad to have you on the phone to explain your process and how you got all that set up. So, I mean, that's dope. You basically bought this apartment and it just had the vibe there already, like it had been used for music already. And so it was almost like one of those things where fate kind of comes in, or God, or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, everything just worked out. You got the perfect apartment with the studio that's like perfect for music. That's dope. So I want to talk to you a little bit about your video. Obviously, the course which this audio is going to be found in is going to be a course primarily about video marketing. So I wanted to ask you, like, you've done a lot of videos. And you've got a green screen now and a camera. and everything like that. You know, and so I've seen a lot of videos from you, and I think that you have some really good music videos out there. And I've seen videos. Let's see, my favorite one. You'll be able to call the name on it. Was it On Fire, or what was the name of that one?
No Fire, No Flames. That was actually filmed in Nebraska.
Wow, No Fire, No Flames. And that was dope. That was like, you had like a concept to it, and there was a lot of actual fires in the video. And I just thought, that one was dope. It was pretty simple, pretty clean, but I mean, it was the I like the theme of it, you know, because I feel like a lot of people, when they make videos, I feel like that's the thing they miss is a theme. Like, you'll see a lot of guys like kind of recording themselves rapping, walking down the street, you know what I mean? And you see a lot of that, like a whole lot of that. And maybe they'll be like in a parking lot the next video, rapping in a parking lot. And then it's like, maybe they'll go to, I don't know, some area where they can smoke a blunt or something, and they light up a blunt and they're like, okay, let's get a blunt shot now, you know? But but I think it's really cool that you actually came up with a concept. And I wanted to talk about that a bit, because when it comes to making videos, in my opinion, and I feel this, I feel this the same way about songs, because we've done a lot of, I mean, Nick and I have been friends our whole life. You know, that's another thing I'm not sure I mentioned in the beginning of the video, that Nick and I have just literally been friends our whole life. We started recording rap music together back when we were so bad. You know, like, we basically had no equipment. We had the worst mics. You know what I mean? Like, I think I had a better studio at that time, because my mom like bought me like a mixer, you know what I mean? And like, he had a mixer, and like, that's basically what we were working with, a mixer and like a cheap $100 mic was my studio. And I think your studio was like a cheaper mixer and like a $80 mic or something, you know? So we were both like, we were both just starting out bare minimum, you know? And it's cool to have us on this interview now, because just thinking about that, you know, to have come so far in so little time, you know, it's really actually pretty astounding. We both have our own music businesses now, and are doing pretty good for ourselves, and have a lot of success under our belt. You know, Nick and I have been in XXL magazine and a couple other magazines as well. And, you know, and we have other success as well. Top charts on SoundClick hundreds of times. God knows how many times we hit number one on SoundClick. Hitting number one on SoundClick became such a thing that I think Nick and I just got used to it. And we were just like, oh, we're number one, you know. Like, I'd send him a message and be like, dude, we're number one. He'd be like, you know, cool, you know. It's just like, we've done this 100 times, you know what I mean? But, but yeah, so we've got plenty of success under our belt. And it's just cool to talk to you, because you know, just from working with me, that the concept idea, not just behind music videos, but behind songs, is like really important to me. Like to me, I feel like having a concept for a video, so it remains interesting, it remains linear, if that makes sense, and everything kind of fits together all in one big plot piece, and maybe even has a story to tell. You know, that's really how I like making music. That's really how I like making videos. Not that I've made as many videos as you in terms of actually rap videos, music videos. I do a lot more marketing videos. But yeah, so tell me, like, what are your thoughts on making a concept? You know, like, do you think that that's something that really is necessary every time for a video or music? Or do you feel like maybe it's, you know, how important is that on your scale, you know?
I think there's two different aspects that you have to look at it from, because in our line of work, 10 years is about the time that I've been making music. Mm-hmm. So you got to think for 10 years and multiply that by 365. So that amount of time, you actually have to spend feeding your fans. So yeah. I think there's two different sides of it, because when you're doing music, a lot of times you're going in there to vent, and a lot of other times you're going in there to try to spread your reach. So it's difficult to come out with a theme every single time that you do something. But that being the case, the most effective videos or songs or whatever the case may be have themes to them. Think about there's a song that this new artist Lil Dicky did called Save That Money, where he basically recorded a video as a documentary going around Beverly Hills and asking people if they can use their mansions to film in, and asking them if they can use their expensive cars and Lamborghinis and Ferraris to film in. And basically did a dope video off the concept of spending absolutely no money. And it went viral. Same thing with my video. When my video went viral, it was a theme behind it. It was cop spits freestyle in his squad car. And the gimmick behind that is police officers and hip hop do not necessarily coincide. So that created a huge buzz. So in order for a video to become effective, you absolutely need a theme. But I don't think it's necessarily required every single time.
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way because a lot of the artists, they come out with the videos that are themed. And you're right. They always do seem to do better. And I like that you brought up the video that you did. So your video, you created a short video, and I think it would be interesting to talk about, because when I talked to you about it, you know, and I talked to Adam as well, actually. I started talking to Adam the other day. I hadn't talked to him in a long time. And so we started speaking and started talking about music and stuff like that. And he was telling me about the video, too. And he was basically saying that it wasn't a planned thing. So this was something that you kind of did. Like, you basically did a freestyle in your car, if I'm not mistaken. And it was just kind of something fun that you did on a morning on your way to work or something. And you're actually not a cop, right? So that, I think that caused some controversy too, but I would have done the same thing. Like, if I worked at a job where I had a uniform that looked anything like a cop, you know, I'd make videos and I'd be like, yep, cop spits freestyle and squad car. You know what I mean? Like, that makes sense. But I want to hear, like, what was your take on that? You know, was that a purposeful move, or was that more of a fluke, or and did you create the title, or was that someone else, or how'd that all happen?
Well, originally, first of all, I'm not a police officer. I work for a private security company that is contracted to to a police department in Denver, Colorado. So I specifically work for the police department, but I am not a sworn in officer. I am a private citizen, private security company contractor. So let's get that out of the way right now.
Sure.
So basically, my buddies and I were kind of just going back and forth, making these videos amongst a tiny little beef that two of my boys were having. And so I just wanted to hop in, and I mean, you know as well as I do that if we do music and everybody's doing music, you're jumping in on that cipher, you know? So that's essentially what the video was. I was sitting in my car waiting for my shift to start, and I recorded that real quick, and I put it up on Facebook and just tagged my three friends that we were doing it with. And in a matter of hours, maybe 8 hours or so, the video had 10,000 plays on it just off my page, which I've only got 700 friends or so. So what I did is I had the idea of going and taking this video and trying to get it to go viral, since it already went mini viral on my scale. So I contacted this gentleman who the administrator for a Facebook site called Mr. Technical Difficulty. He said that it was awesome. He was like, you know, what do I label it as? He's like, can I call you a cop? And I said, yeah, I mean, of course I knew I wasn't a cop, but security guard spits freestyle wouldn't have you know, done as well. So he put it up as cop spits bars or something like that. And then World Star Hip Hop saw that overnight. Once the page hit like 500,000 views in 2 hours, World Star Hip Hop got wind of it and put it up on theirs. So I woke up in the morning and my phone was just destroyed with notifications and phone calls, and World Star had 500,000 views on it collectively. And then I went on YouTube, and my face is all over YouTube because people are taking this video and trying to use it as their own. And it was just ridiculous. Like, it literally was an overnight thing, because people don't know I've been working on music for 10 years and nobody's ever batted an eye. And all of a sudden I do a shitty phone video. Sorry for the language, but a crappy phone video, and then it, you know, it goes viral. So that's what it was, and that's what it is.
Wow, that's really cool. But I'm sure that you learned a lot from this experience, you know. And yeah, and I hear you. Like, you know, sometimes it does feel like that when you're an artist. You're like, I wonder if people are even listening or paying attention, you know. And you have your own success along the way, But, you know, when something like that happens, I can see why it would make you feel that way. Like, no one ever blinked an eye before, and then all of a sudden you got millions of views or whatever. When it's that big of a margin, it goes from a video getting thousands of views on average to getting hundreds of thousands of views, you know. And I think that's cool. You know, honestly, there are people, I think, when I was looking at the controversies, because a lot of people loved it, right? And what's funny is your phone was blown up. My phone was blown up. So I don't know who else's phone was blown up. People were calling me, yo, man, is that your boy Casher? Like Jason, you know, remember Jason? Jason gave me a call like right away. He's like, bro, is Casher on like Worldstar? You know, he's like a big follower of Worldstar. And like Mario's calling me. God, my phone's blown up about it too. And I'm not even involved in the video at all, you know? So I can imagine your phone has just destroyed, like you said, notifications. And I'm sure that you got a lot of hate from that as well as people saying, hey, this is really awesome. I love this. And you can kind of see it in the comments. And that's what I liked about it, you know, because that's something that's controversial. And I think that controversy really does, I mean, it can sell anything. Like, controversy will get anything out there so much more. If you can get people commenting back and forth to each other saying, this guy's dope, he's the business, get off his D, you know what I mean? And then you got another guy commenting and he's like, nah, man, he shouldn't be, like, cops shouldn't be rapping, you know what I mean? Or somebody saying, oh, he's not even a real cop, you know, he said it on his Facebook page. And it went crazy like that. Like, I saw a certain website where, I think it was Cop Block or something like that, where they basically went to your Facebook and they went down and they looked at all of your posts for the past, like, 6 months, you know, and they basically picked out every post that they could find, and they looked at the comments and everything. I mean, I was surprised. That's a fair amount of, I gotta say, that's a lot of research to do. Like that shows, like, that, you know, people on publicity websites, whenever they're trying to promote something, they do that research normally, and that's really what news is all about. You know, I think a lot of people confuse news these days with, like, satire stuff, and I think that website is pretty much satire. But at least it had some research involved. I was surprised to see how much they looked at your page and how much they picked apart everything, which, while I didn't like what they were saying and the fact that they weren't, for you, to me, it's all the same. Like, to me, it's like, if someone hates you and they talk about you, you're going to get known to one more person. While if somebody likes you and they talk about you, you're going to get known to one more person. So, like, to me, it's just like, you know, I've always said, like, haters make the business happen, you know. Like, I mean, God knows I had more haters than I don't even know who had haters like I did, you know my story and how I had to come up, and I had so much hate and nobody believed in me, you know, so I was very, very, very used to that. So when I see stuff like that, talking about you, it didn't even get me to that core, you know, because I'm loyal to you and I'm defensive of you, but in that way, when I saw that, I was still just like, you know what, I don't even care, because you know what? This website's pretty big, and he posted about Nick, and Nick's just going to get more love for it, so whatever. But the controversy thing is huge, because that really helps spread the video. People commenting on each other, sharing it on their page, saying, yo, this cop's rapping, and people are talking about their opinions on that. Man, I got an opinion on that, you know? And, like, I think that, to me, looking at it from an outsider, it looked like the mob. You know, it looked like Rome is the mob. Like, I just really saw that. I was like, the general population of people are so stupid and misguided, you know what I mean? Like, basically, to, you know, you make a short video that's like 20 seconds or 30 seconds long, right? Which is, like, a lot of the viral videos these days are like 30 second little snippets anyway, but you make, like, a 30 second video with maybe half a verse on it, right? And it gets posted up as cop spits freestyle, and just because, like you said, if it didn't say cop, if it says security guard spits freestyle, I guess it might have done the same, but realistically it probably wouldn't have gone as far, and the reason it got so much attention is, you know, in my opinion, or from what I saw, is just because right now there's so much tension in America when it comes to cops. Like, there is so much tension. You see it all over the Facebook feeds, cops beating people up, statistics about how many people get shot per year by cops in America, you know what I mean? And we have it bad here. This country is a country where, you know, you and me are both big gun rights guys, you know? So, I mean, like, I really think that we should all be able to have guns and personally, in my opinion, I think that going through background checks isn't too much to ask, because every gun I've ever bought, I've had to go through a background check. So to me, it's not a big deal. But not to get too political here, but basically, even with that, you know, we do have a some sort of gun violence problem in America, regardless what your political beliefs are or whatever. There's statistics showing that compared to other countries, we have, for some reason, we have this violence problem. And it's not necessarily the guns, because there's a lot of countries that everyone has guns and there aren't these problems. And then here we have all these guns, but there's also all these problems. So I don't know where all that comes from, but just the fact that the controversy was there and that everyone's so pissed off about cops these days and talking about on Facebook all of because of the American controversy that's going on in the news every day about police officers and everything. That was enough to take this 30-second video and push it all the way to the point that it's getting millions of views. It's on World Star. And I remember talking to you about it, and you almost at one point, you know, you were kind of snappy and kind of like a little upset. You know, it seemed like you were upset, and I was talking to you about it, and you're like, oh, yeah, man, I'm sorry. Like, it's just that, you know, I put a video of me being a cop, and it's kind of a gimmicky thing, and it goes to this extent and gets all this publicity, right? So how'd you feel about that? What kind of things were you going through? Because there had to be a lot of happiness too, but I imagine it was a tornado of emotions for you when this all happened. So I want to hear a little bit about your side. Like, what, how did you feel during all of this, and what kind of things can you expect? Like, if a video goes viral for you, what can you expect, you know, as an artist, in terms of what you have to go through to, and what you have to see and what you watch, and what do you think about people, you know? Cause to me, it's like the mob, you know. When I saw that, I was like, wow, people are so dumb. You know, they're freaking out about a rap video. You know what I mean? It's 30 seconds long. Like, this is crazy. Mm. And I really saw that myself, but what were your feelings on it? And what could you tell people to expect?
Well, one thing that I should have seen in hindsight is there's a word called, Kairos, which is, it's an ancient Greek word, and it basically means the right time or the right opportune moment. So when you're talking about what this video correlated to the current events with police brutality and the whole police versus citizen movement, this fits right up there with the top list of issues that are currently in current events in America. Mm-hmm. So what I didn't anticipate for was the amount of controversy that it would have caused. So when I, of course, between all my friends, all my friends are like, oh, that's dope, because right. They know who I am. They know I'm not a violent dude. I mean, they know I'm not out here beating people or whatever the case may be. They know I basically live my life for humor. So when it finally went viral and I saw the amount of negativity coming from these uneducated Americans and
yeah,
about what was going on, it was really, like, I felt it was overwhelming. I wasn't ready for it. I think mostly because I don't have the time for that. I go to school full time. I work full time. I've got 4 kids and a wife. I've got a house to maintain. Like, it's like I wasn't ready to take on the responsibility of trying to do something with this video. As far as people go, I mean, I definitely agree that there's an issue within American law enforcement that needs to be addressed. I just hate the fact that I was caught up in that, because for me being a fairly good dude, I catch the backlash just from that video. So. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the issues is that Americans are really uneducated when it comes to law enforcement tactics and the correlation between the two. They just think that, you know, it's okay that if you go to, or they think it's wrong that if you go and rob a convenience store and then get thrown on your face after, that you didn't deserve it. Like, I don't really see the the connection between.
No, and I see that. How, yeah, it, yeah. If,
But yeah, it was crazy, and the amount of hate that I received, I don't think I'd wish upon anybody. I mean, it was a cool experience, but it was it really was nerve wracking to say the least.
Yeah, and I remember seeing a post on your Facebook not too long ago saying, "Hey, I never checked the other messages folder," you know, and that one kind of struck me because I already knew that you had gone through a lot of anxiety and things like that through the process of this video going viral. So when I saw that, I felt a little bad for you. You know, I was like, oh man, he didn't even look at that folder till just now. Like, cause I already know about that folder, and I already know that if someone doesn't add you as a friend and they message you, it's gonna go to your other folder. And I mean, it's almost impossible to find. Like, I don't even think you could find it on your mobile. I don't know where you find the other folder on your mobile device. You know, on their computer, it's there, but it's kind of like faded in the background. When you open your messages, it's kind of a faded little, you know, they don't make it very easy to connect with people you're not friends with, which to me is pretty stupid. But I think that, you know, you go there and you see just like tons of hate mail, tons of things coming out of people's mouths. And, you know, you're right. You did take a kind of a bitter, I say bittersweet kind of a view from all of that, you know. So I mean, that's just crazy. So when it came down to it, I think what you're saying is that the controversy was actually good. Like, the controversy is what brought the video to where it is. It got it all the way on World Star. It was a 30-second video, and all you had to do was say "cop freestyling," you know what I mean? And when you talk about uneducated people or whatever, and you talk about in the video how you were actually, you know, you might have dropped a line. Like, I think the line that you're talking about is, I used to rob dudes like you for their wristwatch or something like that. Yeah. In an otherwise nonviolent video, you know, like basically that was the one line that I heard that was like, you know, that was funny. And that must have caused more controversy too, because basically you got a cop saying that he's robbed people before, you know what I mean, or whatever. And so a lot of people kind of took on to that last line. You know, that's what's funny about it, is that's the last line. But that's like, it's interesting and it's really cool to talk about, because that's kind of like the thing that happens here in America. You're right, with uneducated people, or I mean, just the masses, you know. I don't know if they're uneducated, or maybe that is the case. Maybe we're all just dumb here. Like, seriously, there are other countries where I know they're not dumb. And in America, when you got to pay $40,000 a year to go to school, when in every other industrialized country on earth right now, every other major industrialized country has free healthcare and free education. And America's like, yeah, healthcare is twice as much as anywhere else, and you have to pay for it. And on top of that, you're going to have education that's going to be as much as if you got hit by a car anyway. So you might as well just get hit by a car and die right now. So,
yeah, right.
So basically with how hard it is in the education system, that might just be it. It might just be the masses of America are easily swayed by media. And that's kind of what I see a lot of times. But kind of what I'm hearing from you is that while the video was controversial, and God knows how much you had to go through in terms of like, self-reflection, anxiety, and all those things had to have come in whenever you've got millions of people viewing your stuff that otherwise wouldn't know who you are, and they're viewing it because of this gimmicky thing that you basically did in your car is just for fun, you know, and it just went so far so fast, you know. So that's got to be hard for you to go through. But at the same time, it's like, it is cool to see that it seems like some controversy is good, and that maybe this video was just a little bit too much controversy. Like, I almost feel like, and I couldn't tell you if it would have done the same. Like, if it would have gone as far, if you didn't have that one last line. Like, what do you think about that? Like, that last line where you said, "I robbed dudes like they wristwatch." I feel like that was the line that was the most controversial, because everyone, once they heard that, they were like, they're either like, "Oh, that was dope," you know, like, don't even think about it, because you and I know that every rapper on earth, I mean, I'd say maybe 1 out of 100 rappers actually doesn't fabricate anything ever, you know what I mean? Or whatever, or not even fabrication. Talk about your past life and the things that you've done, like whether you're a cop or a security guard or a music producer or anything at all. You know, the fact is that we've all done a lot of crazy stuff. I've done crazy stuff. I've got stories that are awesome. You know what I mean? And you've got stories too. And you've got awesome stories too. And you, aside from the things that you went through in life, you also have some awesome stories, because you actually went to Afghanistan. And did you go to multiple times, or was it just once?
No, I went there once.
Okay, so you were in Afghanistan. I remember talking to you, and you were just telling me about some crazy stories. And I would ask you, dude, like, are you doing okay over there? You know what I mean? Like, how are you feeling? I worried about you a lot, man, when you were over in Afghanistan. That's why, I mean, I tried to hit you up. like at least a couple times a month or something, because I worried about you. I was thinking about you, like, man, he's over in Afghanistan. Like, I can't lose my boy, you know, and I'm trying to think about, you know, all that stuff, and it's pretty intense. But when I talked to you about it, you know, you were like, nah, you know, I pretty much think that, like, I'm good at this. You know what I mean? Like, you were telling me some crazy stories, and you were just like, you know what? That's just how crazy I am. So it all worked out. Like, I fit in here in Afghanistan. You know what I mean? And that,
yeah.
And that was crazy. But so what do you think about that, though? That, like, do you think that maybe saying that last line just could have been, do you think without that line, it would have still gone the same and gotten you less hate? Or do you think that it would have not gone as far, but maybe gotten you, you know, less hate, or, you know what I mean? Like, what do you think about controversy? Cause I think what I'm talking about here is, like, levels of controversy. You want your stuff to be controversial, but do you think that you did just the right amount of controversy? Or do you think that you maybe overdid the controversy just with the lines you said? You know, what are your thoughts on that? Because, again, without the controversy, I'm sure it wouldn't have gotten millions of views. Without the cop in the title, I'm sure it wouldn't have gotten a million views. And you saying that you robbed dudes for their wristwatch, which is super funny and awesome. I thought the line was cool. You know, I didn't think about it when I heard that line. I thought a little bit about it. I was like, oh, I wonder if people are hate on that. But I didn't really care, because really I was just excited that you were making a million views and I was happy for you. But do you think you went overboard with controversy, or what do you think about that whole situation?
No, looking back at it, like, when I was in the moment, it was just an in the moment thing. But looking back at it, I think it couldn't have played out any more perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you notice in the video, I'm smiling the whole time because I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah, you look like a nice guy.
It's not, you can tell just by my facial expressions that it's not, I'm not serious about it. Even though there might be truth in the things that I'm saying, I'm not serious about it. So when you're listening to it and then that last line hits, you got to be confused, because you're like, he's talking about robbing dudes for his wristwatch, but he's smiling and he's in uniform and he's got a gun on him. I don't understand what's happening here. So I think that that line specifically needed to be in there to create the aurora that it had. And I know you've heard before that no publicity is bad saying?
No, you had the line right the first time.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So, it as much drama as that specific line, I rob dudes like you for their wristwatch. That's 9 words, dude. So, in 9 words, it literally stirred the melting pot. So, I think that that specific line was fine. I think that in the future, which you actually talked to me about this, and I think I was too naive to see it at the time. But in the future, anybody whoever does a viral video, you need to watch what you say after the video, because what you say after the video is going to make or break how people view you. So me, I went on, and I live my life for comedy. So I went on, and these guys are like, oh, he's a crooked cop, and he probably is robbing people for their wristwatch. That's what's wrong with America. And I would go on and say some stupid stuff like, oh, no, I'm just out here pepper spraying homeless people and shooting unarmed black teens. Like, obviously, anybody that has any type of intelligence at all knows that I'm joking. But you got to think about how many tree huggers there are out there, and how many people that can't see past the tip of their nose that line or whatever I said after the fact didn't sit well with them. So where the video might have been cool, I lost a lot of respect for the things that I said afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, social media presence. Yeah, my dad gave me that same advice. You know, when I gave you that advice, I was literally like almost like copy and pasting from my brain what my dad told me, because I posted up. I'm just gonna be honest in this video, because we're keeping it 100 right now, and I can just tell that this is a real honest video. So I'm just gonna keep it 100. Like, back in the day, I used to post on Facebook about, like, oh yeah, like I smoke weed, you know, like hitting the blunt, you know what I mean? And basically my dad hit me up and was like, you know, you run a business, you know, you can't really like talk about smoking weed. And I was like, you know, I kind of have the same reaction that you did, actually. I was basically like, you know, I can say whatever I want because I don't care. And in the end, people who are following my business are going to follow me. And it is what it is. And it's like they should follow me for being me. And I want to be able to be me. I want to be able to be funny. And I want to be able to post up about smoking weed or whatever and playing around and things like that on Facebook. And he had a line I'll never forget. He said something like, you know, it's just that it's my personal stuff. I'm putting up some personal or whatever. And he's like, it's amazing how close personal and business are these days. And I thought that was really powerful because it's so true. Like back in the day, you could get away with having a little bit of personal issues and maybe the tabloids would talk about you or whatever. But nowadays we have so many connections on the internet with Facebook and Gmail and all of these resources to allow us to connect to each other that it's just that easy that you make a comment on Facebook and you got people on your page straight up screenshotting the pictures of what you've said, putting it up on a website and creating a whole article about you. You know what I mean? And so that's insane. That's insane, you know? And it is one of those things that like you look back on later and you're like, man, you know, cause in the moment it never feels that way. I felt the same exact way when my dad told me that same line. I was like, I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to do me. I think people should believe in me and you know, smoking weed is something I do. So why not? Whatever. But you know, when I said that stuff, looking back on it now, I think the same way. I'm like, man, you know, it's really true. And these days on Facebook, like I'm pretty politically correct. Every once in a while I put up something that's controversial, but for the most part, I'm pretty politically correct. And when I do controversy, I like to make it like, I don't know how to say it. I like to do like safe controversy, like a little bit controversial, but not too much, you know, like even like especially political and religious. Like you never want to get like another one of my friends actually told me this information. And this is actually a cool idea. He said that you shouldn't ever talk to friends about politics or religion. Because they are so personally involved subjects. Now you might be voting for Donald Trump, you know, and I might be voting for President Sanders or Senator Sanders. You know what I mean? And so our views might be totally different. Or you might be voting for Joe Biden or whatever. You know what I mean? So when it comes to politics, if we're gonna be talking politics or religion, it's going to be a really sensitive subject. You know what I mean? If you want to keep everyone's guns and I think, oh, I want a safe household, no one should have guns. You know what I mean? Then we're going to have a huge debate over that. And it's probably going to get out of hand. And it's the same way with the internet. Like when you post something up on the internet, they're going to take that and they're going to try to twist it. They're going to try to make you look as bad as possible, you know? We're not held back to the tabloids anymore. Like it's not just the tabloids you got to worry about. Anyone and everyone can come and steal information from your Facebook page and start talking about it. So yeah, that's a pretty big deal. But you know, but in the end, when it comes to making videos, I think that I agree with you that basically, when it comes down to it, you're not looking at the same situation if you wouldn't have had that line. And I think that way, too. I think that controversy is the thing that brought that video to the top. And to be honest with you, I think that controversy is one of the best sellers of all time. And, you know, that we're both like, I mean, I'm Cuban, I guess, but we're both light skinned rappers. You know what I mean? We're white rappers, you know, and basically the big white rapper Eminem who came up, you know, I mean, this guy went from not being able to get a name to, you know, no matter what he did, to basically just diving into controversy. Like Eminem just dove into controversy. He said, what can I do to piss people off? And he said, what can I do to make people just go batshit crazy, you know? And he was like, all right, I'm going to talk about gay people. And I'm going to talk about gay people suck each other off. I'm going to call them the, you know, faggot or whatever in my songs. And you know what I mean? And nowadays, especially, and that's even more controversial now, but it's almost like people are used to it now with Eminem. But, you know, now we've got the gay rights movement making huge, huge, huge steps with the gay rights movement. And almost, I mean, I live in Washington. Like, where I live, there's so many gay people, you know what I mean? But, like, basically, when it comes down to it, Eminem jumped in with controversy. He said, I am white, which makes no sense for the rap game right now. At that time, it was very much, you know, predominantly what people were calling black music. And I kind of put my fingers up in quotes like black music, you know, when I say that, because realistically, anyone who's actually educated knows that all music came from black people. Like, let's be real. Like, rock and roll, black mm-hmm. people. Blues, black people. Rap, hip-hop, black people. And there's an interesting idea that actually, and this is kind of like a whole different conversation, but more of a conversation about race. But basically, I've seen people in the hip-hop game, black people. You know, I love black people. A lot of my friends are black people, and I have a music production company. So, I mean, I have a low, a small stomach for racism, because the fact is that I have friends of all different races and backgrounds, and I've never really been a racist guy. I mean, I grew up in, even in elementary school, like, my friends were Asian and Mexican and black, and it didn't matter to me. But at the time, Eminem came up and said, I am a white rapper who's going to be talking about gay people, and is going to be talking about my baby mama drama, and I'm going to be just coming through with as much controversy as possible. And basically, his big three controversies, I think, he also talked about bullying a lot, which I think helped him relate to the youth of America. You know, we have a big bullying problem here in this country. But he basically hit baby mama drama, I'm a white rapper, you know, gay hate, basically hating on gay people and hating on women. You know what I mean? Which is more than half of the world's population is women. So how much more controversial can you get than saying, oh, all women are whores in a rap song or something like that? You know what I mean? but yeah, I think that controversy is the way to go, you know? And aside from this video, you know, how's the actual studio going? Because I know you started the studio, and last time I talked to you, you said you had lined up a fair amount of work already for your brand new studio that wasn't even set up yet. Like, I talked to Nick about maybe, I don't know, a couple weeks, maybe a month before a studio was actually fully set up and ready to go. And he said, oh yeah, my wife has already come up with, like, you know, $500-$600 worth of studio time that we're going to have to get people in here to do next month. Like, you know, what was your process there? How'd you get that started? Because now you're starting a successful studio, and I know people listening to this are interested in that as well. So I want to talk about more about your studio, your business, and hear a little bit more about you.
Well, when we started, my wife kind of put the bug in people's ears that she works with. She works for a logistics company out here in Denver. She went to work, and there's a lot of people that are into the hip-hop scene that work there. So she started talking to some of the guys that worked for her, and they were like, oh, no kidding, you got a studio. And with us, the reason why we called it 100 Zone Studio is because 100% of what you need done can be done here, and this is the zone to do it. So if you need recording time, we do that. If you need beats, we do that. You need mixing and mastering, we do that. You need photos, graphic designing, music videos, guess what? We do that. If you need album covers, we do that. We do absolutely everything. So when they found that out, they were like, oh, we need, you know, music videos for this. And we just had so many different waves of people that were coming, at least interested, which is, you know, if we can get a lead, it's better than getting no lead, even if they don't buy anything. So, as to date, I think we've got, maybe six dedicated clients, right now. Between music videos, recording, studio time. Music videos is the big one because we're charging $300 per music video, which if you know anything about music videos for yeah, really good cheap. Production, is cheap. I mean, it's dirt cheap. We're going to have to go up on our prices. But let's just say this, that my rent has been paid for the past 2 months through my business.
Wow, that's amazing. And so you working full time, going to school, having a studio and a family of, what did you say? You have, is it three or four kids?
I got four. One of them doesn't live with me.
That's right. You have four, but one of them doesn't live with you. Exactly. So you've got three kids in the house right now with a wife. You know what I mean? And you've got a house and bills, full-time workload, and you're going to school. And on top of all this, you can have a business like that. If you're listening to this phone call right now and you're making excuses, you need to slap yourself in the face, all right? If you're listening to this phone call right now and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, but I don't have those resources, I don't have the money, or I don't have the time or whatever, slap yourself in the face, shut your mouth, because there's a way to make it happen. And for you to have a full-time job going to school, now, are you paying for school?
No, the military pays for my school.
Okay. Okay, cool. So you've got the military paying for your school, but even without the financial obligations of actually going to school, the fact is you've got a house to pay. You've got a family to feed and to put food on the table. And I'm sure I know you well enough to know you're probably cooking and cleaning and doing that kind of home stuff as well. So I mean, and you know, Meg has a job as well. So that's crazy. You know, that is really inspiring. I think that anyone listening to this call should be inspired. And I don't want to keep you too much longer. I'll probably keep you for maybe a few more minutes here while we wrap up the phone. I said we were going to take no longer than 45 minutes, but I don't know why I say that to people. Every time I say it's a 45, I always try to say like, oh, yeah, I won't take too much of your time. But when it comes to the interview, I get excited and we end up talking for an hour, you know,
no
at
worries.
Least.
No worries.
So anyway, but yeah, man, you know, I'm so stoked to hear that you've got your business set up, that you've got everything going on. And I think you brought up an interesting point that I think people need to hear. Not only have you created a studio where you can do everything, right? Videos, which is crazy. That's really good. And, of course, you're going to be able to make a lot of money through videos, because while people might be able to record at their house and might be able to have a little computer set up, which is what most people have these days, just a computer, a program, and a mic, you know, pretty much with maybe an interface. You know, now you could do all that at home and you might get bad quality, but you could do all that at home, even without really a whole lot of skills. And again, the quality is going to come as you get the skills. I mean, the skill base is what's going to bring you to the next level of quality. But you're doing all of this and you're making money. And in the end, you know, it's completely on your shoulders. It's completely something that you personally have made happen. And I think that one point that you've said that's really interesting is you said that Meg actually works at a place where there's a lot of hip hop heads, and that helped you get your start. So would you say location is important? Because I hear a lot. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of guys, and I've heard a lot from people that I've heard this location thing again and again and again, that if you put yourself in these situations, you can make connections. And a lot of people who say that are mostly talking about industry parties and things like that, like going to parties in the industry, meeting up with some semi-famous people, you know, which is easier to do if you're in, let's say, Atlanta or in LA, or somewhere where music is predominant like that, right? But basically, you know, location is a big thing. Like, if you could put yourself in the space to where you're actually in the middle of a bunch of people who are interested in recording and you've got the tools, that could be a big help, and you can make those connections just like that. So do you hear me on that? Do you agree with that? That if you just have the right location and a place that you could connect with other people, that's all you need? Cause you've got six clients and you're saying you're paying your rent off that.
Yeah, that's just dedicated clients right now. We've had, you know, more people come in.
Sure.
But I would say that location is definitely key. I don't think that you can go to the outer suburbs and do this kind of stuff. I think any major city, you can do it. But don't get it twisted. It's not just about that. You have to put in a lot of time and effort. Like, I'm out on the streets for 8 hours a day when I'm working. And what we did is we printed business cards. And on the business cards, it says, present this card to 100 Zone Studios, and you can have one free hour of recording time.
Oh, my God. That's such good marketing. I love it.
We went out, and I have these business cards, and it's got our number on it and the our logo on it and everything like that. And I go out, and I market all day long. Just, hey, do you know anybody, any hip-hop heads? You know, do you know anybody that does music? You know, this is what we can do for you, and just kind of make contact. So it gets kind of depressing, because out of 100 people that you talk to, maybe only six of them will ever become customers, but that's how you grow. At least those 100 people have heard of us before. So maybe sometime down the future, somebody says, hey, I wish I had a recording studio to go to. And this guy says, oh, I think I got this business card on my wallet from a few months ago that this guy gave me. He says he's got a studio. So I don't think that people understand how key it is to go out and actually make physical contact with these people, not just on social media. Go to concert venues. Like, I get off work at 10 and I go to concert venues and start marketing there. You know what I'm saying? So wow. that whole actually marketing in person, as far as me, is where we've gotten all the business from. None of it has been online.
That's very cool. So then for you, location base is like the number one priority, because you're basically going out and making stuff happen, and that's crazy, and I love that, you know?
Yep.
Wow. So you've got business cards, and business cards are pretty cheap. Like, I like that idea where you get a free hour of studio time, obviously, because studio time is kind of like a drug, and if you can get someone in for an hour, you can get them in for 3 hours. You know, but basically, that's so awesome. And I just think that that's a really powerful way to promote. And that's really location based. Like, you're just going from place to place, and you're even kind of intertwining it with work and being able to, while you're on the clock, kind of handing out business cards, you know, and that's just crazy. You know, that's a really good way to make that extra income, to get those six, seven clients who come in like every twice a week or something, to where you can pay your whole rent off of just a few clients. And I know a guy, Mario, actually. Mario, you know Mario. He actually...
Castellini. Yeah.
Yeah. He actually is living on his own now in a little apartment and lives off of just studio time. And now, granted, I did go to his apartment. And, I mean, it's a straight up shared apartment, okay? And this is actually also inspiring for people listening, because he's paying $400 a month for rent, basically just has a room in a big apartment that has like literally like four people living in it. You know, there's like a freaking, I don't even know what to call it. It's like a community household.
It's a frat house.
Frat house or something, you know? And he's got a couple of cute girls as roommates too, so I couldn't complain. I was like, what's up, cute girls, you know? That's cool. But it was just crazy to see this apartment, because there's all this noise going on and stuff, and he kind of closes the room to this little tiny room that is where he sleeps, and you just see he's got on the floor, he's got like a cot where he sleeps, and it's just like a small little cot, you know? And aside from that, he's just got his little studio, which is basically a table, a computer, a microphone, and an interface. And that was really cool to see that, because he's living entirely off of recording, and he kind of is the same way. He just has a few clients. He doesn't really need a whole lot. And he even just said he just started charging people that used to just work for come and work, and he'd do it for free for years or whatever. And now he's just like, hey, guys, I can't do this anymore. You guys have to start paying, or I have to find new clients or whatever, because the fact is time is money, blah, blah, blah. And so even in that, you know, that's another thing. If you're listening to this and you, even after hearing Cash's story, you still want to make excuses, well, now you can slap yourself in the face, because I'm talking about Mario living in a freaking tiny little room in an apartment with four people, and he's got a computer and a mic, and that's it. And this dude is still able to pay his rent, still able to pay his bills, able to stay up for months and months without a job. Basically just being, you know, I don't know how to say it, I could even call him a lazy entrepreneur or something, you know, like a half-asser or something, you know. It sounds like that when I say story, but in reality, you know, he did this on his own accord. He took the risk. He moved out. He got out of his job. He took all those risks. So that, even though it seems like it might sound really ghetto whenever I talk about it, I think that that's really inspiring as well. Just to, even though he's just paying a little bit for rent or whatever, I think anytime a musician lives on their own, it's very inspiring. It's inspiring that I do it. It's inspiring that Mario does it. Inspiring that Nick does it. You know, and to me, it's just so exciting to hear you actually having those successes. And that's truly amazing. So I want to wrap up this call, because we're getting up to an hour, and I think an hour is pretty much a perfect ending point for any interview. I wouldn't say any interview, but for most interviews. So basically, I want to maybe get you on the phone again at a later date and maybe do another interview later. But I want to ask you, like, what's the final shout out? What do you want to, what's the last thing you want to say to our viewers before getting off the phone?
I would say that if you're going to do something, or you want to do something, or you have aspirations to do something, that you need to go do it. Because I've waited for 10 years to start doing this, and it's not until I actually stood up and started doing something that it started coming together. You'd be surprised what a little bit of get up and go will do for you and your success. And anybody who's out there who says differently, I'd be more than happy to show you how it goes.
Wow, that's such a powerful end note, man. I really appreciate that, because, yeah, I agree. I think that the biggest thing that holds most people back is just waiting. You know, people just kind of dabble around. They dabble around, and they don't get fully serious. They don't take the risks. And while taking a risk might seem like a bad idea, honestly, if you don't take risks, there's no way to get profit. Because if you think about it, no matter what business you're in, when it comes to advertising, when it comes to promoting, even buying the business cards, even getting a studio set up, all of those were risks for you. But the fact is that a risk without, like, people attribute risk to failure. But I think that when it comes to risk, you can't succeed without risk. So you can't succeed without risk. So take those steps. I think that's a very powerful, very powerful end shout out for you to say. Believe in yourself. Take risks. Make it happen. Get going. Slap yourself in the face at least 3 times after watching this video, but I'm going to add a little disclaimer here and say, don't hurt yourself. All right. Cause I am kidding. So anyway, so Casher, thank you so much for your time. Shout out to 100 Zone Studios, and please definitely keep your business running. I can't wait to get you on the phone in the future. And thank you so much for your time on this call.
Sure, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem, man. All right.
Yeah, I'm here, man.